sympathize with the homeless when I see him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside, safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way, but she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
Yes, it's Mark Levy, the yodeling fool, and his song The Homeless Shuffle, that's it, from his album Take Off Your Clothes. That's an album 10 years old, Take Off Your Clothes, put out by Nuclear Records up in Felton. If you're interested in that album, he's got plenty of them. He can send you one for some reasonable price. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Yes, you're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the long-delayed next edition. It's the 15th of August when I'm recording this edition, normally for the 16th of August Friday show, but since Free Radio Santa Cruz, that you're now listening to, is kind of zipping around one step ahead of the feds and actually looking for a place to roost, we're kind of going in at odd intervals here, so I'm not sure when you're going to hear this tape, but this is normally Bathrop Spears broadsides every Monday and Friday from 10 to noon, and I hope I'll get back on that schedule at some point, but until then we'll just have to kind of make it up as we go along. It's summertime, it's August, it's 1996, and it's an election year. And that means we've got candidates kind of scooting out of the woodwork, particularly the scam candidates. So actually, we'll see what SCAN does this year. SCAN, of course, is the Santa Cruz Action Network, kind of a group of queen makers, coronation experts who sort of select the winning city council candidates and then mobilize to elect them. Usually people who call themselves progressives and often are anything but on homeless issues, for instance. Homeless issues, the rights of poor people downtown, the rights of everyone, rich, poor, or otherwise, to use public spaces without being told they have to pay to sit in a chair, be properly dressed, meet the clothing and behavioral uniformity standards of a particular class of yuppies downtown. But perhaps to use the rhetoric of the Republicans, what we want is inclusionary big tent tactics in Santa Cruz, and not the Rotkin-esque arrest the homeless, arrest the sleepers, get together a court order to get the protesters in front of City Hall removed, ignore the fundamental issue, the right to sleep at night. What we want are candidates, members on the City Council, citizens in positions of power who respect basic human rights for people here in Santa Cruz. So you can't really call in today because there's no real phone number to call into. You can, as usual, give me a call if you want at 423-4833. And if you have any objections or comments or criticisms or additions or whatever, you can put them on the tape that records your incoming message, and I will, of course, put it over the air. And well, here's a little something that might interest you. I so rarely get critics who call in. Here's a critic who called in. Now, he didn't actually leave me permission to use his voice on the air, but I figure, who knows, maybe he would appreciate the opportunity to have a wider audience. So here's a critic calling in. I'm not entirely clear what he's being critical of, but he is talking about homeless issues. And well, make up your own mind. See what you think of this fellow. This call came in, I guess it was yesterday, on my answering machine.
Robert, nobody's arguing that there's a problem with homelessness, but homelessness has to do with people who contribute to the community. Your little band of vigilant fuck-ups are not contributing to the community. They do nothing. They sit there all day. And now they're blaming the merchants for all of their problems. I asked one guy why. He said, because we never stood up for you. Well, when did you guys stand up for the merchants? Never. What about all the people that you're affecting for their jobs and stuff down there? I mean, all you're doing is hurting your community. So I don't know where you get off. The way you focus your attacks, you're going after the wrong people. We are not the cause of your problems. And whatever happened to people taking care of themselves? All the time those guys sit down there, they could be actually out looking for work or doing something to change their situation, but they won't do it. They could learn something from the Mexicans. Everybody goes out and works, piles a bunch up into a house, gets their cost of living way down, and they go on from there, and they take care of themselves. These are just a bunch of burned out guys from high school, took too many drugs, and they're sitting around demanding that somebody take care of them. And it's bullshit. And you're making me have to deal with it. And I'm not happy with it. So I don't know what the solution is here, but I just wish you would just leave town or do something. Every time I try to talk to your folks down there, it's just unbelievable. I mean, they actually really believe in what they're saying, but they are so immature. They're just a bunch of kids that never fucking grew up. And that includes you. You're nothing but a fat slob, overpaid, and you do nothing for your community. Yeah, I support the cannabis thing. I mean, that people should be allowed it for medicinal uses. See, I mean, you got a few things going for you, but your little homeless thing is just so dead end. You're not helping homeless people. You're not. It has nothing to do with homeless. They're just a bunch of punks. Go stand down there in the corner of Cathcart and Pacific. Those aren't homeless people. And if one out of all of them is homeless, and the police do something about it, it becomes homeless oppression. Those are just a bunch of punks with nothing to do. I really think we should reinstate the military, put all these kids in there and do something. Something for them. They have nothing to do. They just walk around all day, and thanks to you, they got rights to do what they're doing. And they're harassing people, and they're harassing merchants. And all the people that work for the merchants are suffering because of it. They didn't do any. It's not their fault that these people have problems. But we're the ones that have to pay for it. So, you need to get your message straight, guy. You know? I don't know. I just don't know what to say to you. You're blowing it for the whole community. You must feel incredibly powerful. You got the whole damn community at its knees. Well, I'll tell you, I've been here nearly my whole life. And I've given up, so congratulations, you win. And I'm leaving Santa Cruz, so you won't be hearing from me anymore. I'm going to go back east somewhere and just sort of tuck my way into some quiet little community. Apparently that's the way it is. You win. Bye.
And that was my latest victim, apparently. It's amazing the kind of power people attribute to you, simply if you keep repeating the same rather simple, obvious truths again and again. And the reason that I guess people think you're so powerful is because other people just don't want to say those things or haven't got the persistence to keep repeating them again and again. And of course, what I have kept repeating over the years again and again is that it is criminal behavior, criminal tyranny for authorities to arrest people, poor people particularly, for falling asleep after the hour of 11 o'clock at night, particularly in an area, in a city where there are no legal places to sleep for the overwhelming majority of people who have to sleep outside. You know, every time I say that statement, I wonder why I've had to say it again, because it's so self-evident. But of course, our city council has its own municipal code sleeping ban law, which is actually going to be challenged on August 30th in a demurrer, which is a court proceeding that comes right before a series of trials. So for instance, if you're being charged with a crime, rather than plead guilty or not guilty, the first thing you do if you're doing a demurrer is you say, I demur to the charge, which means I believe that the charge itself is inappropriate for some reason. In this case, the sleeping ban, or camping ban, sleeping sections of the camping ban, is unconstitutional. And there's going to be a lengthy defense, and already has been a rather extensive brief given to the court by attorney Kate Wells, Ed Shun, and Larry Hildes of Berkeley on behalf of, with dozens of defendants, but individuals charged with sleeping at City Hall. Now, Mayor Mike Rodkin's response, of course, to all this is to tell us and to tell those people who have been arrested at City Hall, which I have not been, at least not this year, is that, hey, these guys want to be arrested. These women are there because they want to make a point, and their whole point is to get arrested. Well, no. The point of these people is to sleep. The point of these people is to make a high-profile statement to anyone watching that shows visitors to the community, news media who might happen to tune in, like the completely ridiculous Karen Clark at the Santa Cruz Sentinel, who might stretch her legs and walk half a block and get some news for once on what's really going on with a basic human rights violation in her town by walking around the corner of the Sentinel to the City Hall, which is where the protest is happening. The point of the protest is not to get arrested. The point of the protest is simply to get the City Council to see reason by a peaceful, nonviolent, persistent presence. And indeed, this is what nonviolent protesters in different eras at different times have done, and from ranging from Henry David Thoreau and his protest against the Mexican War in the 1840s to Gandhi in South Africa in the 1890s and early 1900s, to Gandhi in India in the 1930s, to Martin Luther King in the American South in the 1950s and 60s, to Mitch Snyder in Washington, D.C., and Jane Himmler here in Santa Cruz in the 1980s. The point is to make very visible an injustice which then provokes public debate and ultimately a significant public response. I don't think there's anything sacrosanct about going to jail. I don't think there's a lot of point in simply getting yourself locked up, even in a symbolic way. On the other hand, if you're not willing to risk going to jail, your actions are going to be real circumscribed and limited. So that really is the point in being willing to risk going to jail in some cases in order to bring an issue into public view. I'm really hoping that the SCAN forum, which is coming up on Wednesday, I believe it's the 21st, I think it's 7 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center on Wednesday, will show some sense for once in the lives of these SCAN members, and they will decline to endorse these revolving door candidates, Cynthia Matthews, and particularly Michael Rotkin. Matthews will actually be her second term. But Rotkin is running for a fourth term, and he's a man who originated the worst penalties under the sleeping ban. He voted in 1979 a law making it a six-month in jail penalty, a six-month misdemeanor with a $1,000 fine as a possible maximum for being caught sleeping twice within 48 hours. And most of us do sleep twice within 48 hours, right, Mike? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with the 500 to 1,500 homeless people who are in the Santa Cruz city limits having the right to sleep at night? That was a question I posed on KZSC at Talk About, on Talk About Show, which is a Wednesday evening show. Michael Sammet was kind of guest hosting, I guess, there. And Dan Hopkins, who's, of course, the grand old man of the City Hall sleepout, he and Mad Dog Mike apparently hold together that demonstration along with Anthony and Zen and a number of others who come and provide support. But Dan is certainly in the hardcore of the demonstration, the group that doesn't go away. Dan and I talked on Michael Sammet's show about the City Hall sleepout. It's been going on now for, well, I think it's going towards 170 days. It'll be 169 days on the 16th. Pretty long time. And we got lots of folks calling in. And this time it was a very encouraging response because we got a lot of criticism. And the criticism was not from bigots or confused and uninformed people who were telling us we should go back where we came from, or telling us we were just seeking publicity, or were telling us that we were outrageously supporting bums and tramps. No, it was from people who thought we weren't doing enough. It was from people who thought they were in despair because they'd seen demonstrations like this repeatedly over the years, and yet the same problems continue to exist. And their point to us was, what can we do to change things? What can we do to make a real change this time? And of course, there was no answer I could give. I have tried a variety of different strategies and tactics in my own time, you know, and as we approach this issue again and again. And of course, to some extent, it's what's needed is more commitment. What's needed is more imagination, more creative tactics, more humor, broader participation and involvement by more people. In 1988, we thought the sleeping ban could be brought down by having middle-class folks in their cars just come and do a park-in downtown in their vehicles and sleep in their cars. And then the police would have to ticket everybody, or else they couldn't ticket just homeless people in their vehicles or people who live in their vans, because then there would be those tickets would fail for selective enforcement purposes. And then we thought, well, we take this issue to the city council. We actually didn't get that demonstration together. We proposed it, but couldn't get enough people to do it. We proposed sleeping out at city council. So then we proposed sleeping in at city council. Tried that repeatedly, and that didn't seem to work. And at the same time, rolling sleepouts were held at the town clock way back in 1988. And the history of it is really interesting, long, and varied. There's a history of street shit sheets. The street shit sheet is the magazine, or I should say newsletter is what it is, that I publish, which you can pick up. You can pick up back issues versions of it. If you want to catch real old back issues, they're on file at the UCSC Special Collections. That's up at University of California in Santa Cruz. So you can actually go back into those stacks and read about those times. There are a few issues of the Street Shit Sheet in the main library here in Santa Cruz. And of course, there are other good newspapers that covered this. Unfortunately, not much local coverage. There was the Street Sheet from San Francisco, published by the Coalition on Homelessness, that still comes out monthly. There's Terry Messman's publication from Oakland Street Spirit, which covers homeless rights issues very well. Terry Messman is, of course, a grand old man of the Union of the Homeless. And the Union of the Homeless up in Oakland has been responsible for securing millions of dollars worth of housing. Literally, millions of dollars worth of housing for poor people. Dignity Housing West happened because of the Union of the Homeless of Oakland, because Terry Messman and his sledgehammer smashed down doors of these abandoned buildings. People took them over and renovated them and then forced the government to turn them over to the people, which is, well, it makes simple common sense. And now it looks like we're going to be trying an avenue through the courts. Looks like we're going to be working first on this demur I mentioned to you, the first step in fighting a bunch of sleeping band cases that have come into the courts, mostly through this protest, though some have come in through other means too. People at the City Hall protest, contrary to Mike Rodkin's statements, are not the only ones who get citations for sleeping outside or covering up with blankets. Rodkin has made a series of contradictory statements. He said that you're only going to get a ticket if you sleep at City Hall, or if you sleep in one of six well-patrolled areas, or if you create a problem. But I get plenty of reports from different people in widely varying locations of the city who have gotten tickets for sleeping outside. So the courts are going to be a way of challenging this, and the local courts have never been terribly helpful around this regard. But then again, we've never had a lot of legal muscle. Not that we have a lot now, but we have more than we have had in the past, which is really very encouraging. And so I encourage everyone to come on August 30th to Judge Kangaroo Kelly, that's his name, Kangaroo Kelly, at least that's what I call him, Tom Kelly's court, that's Friday, around 9 o'clock in Department 1, and listen to the fur fly, or watch the black robes ruffle, or whatever you will. Courts are going to be one of the avenues, and I think that's going to work when you combine that with the elections, when you combine that with pressure on the city council, when you combine that with demonstrations outside, and when you combine that with a growing sensibility and a growing sense of sanity among people who are fed up with progressive rhetoric, such as, for example, Eleanor Eisenberg was babbling at her coming out party. I don't know if you know, Eleanor Eisenberg is running for one of the city council seats, the four city council seats that has opened up. And Eisenberg is an ACLU civil liberties attorney who has made some excellent statements on some issues, like the issue of the county curfew law, which is now, unfortunately, law makes it illegal for 18-year-olds or under to be out at night after 11 o'clock at night, unless they're engaging in some prescribed task of some kind. Coming from a movie, coming from a job, it's illegal to linger around if you're outside the Santa Cruz city limits, because it doesn't apply in the city limits of Santa Cruz, only in the county, and if you're under 18, is it 18 or under? I think it's under 18, which of course includes a number of students, and almost everybody who testified against this curfew, well, almost everybody in the room at the supervisor's hearing where the curfew was brought up, and there were actually a couple of them, testified against it, but of course that made no difference to our supervisors, who also believe in funding gunships to track down cannabis users. We know all about that. That's been, of course, a recent issue. It's been very hot. But in any case, Eleanor Eisenberg, an ACLU member and leader for some years, has decided to throw her hat into the ring in the city council race in a way which might seem a very positive thing. But the problem is the local ACLU has done virtually nothing regarding the rights of poor people in our area. There
are a few exceptions. For instance, they did hold a forum and then took a few cases around the sitting ban in 1994. And they did speak out in 1993 when then-Mayor Coonerty, now Bookshop Santa Cruz owner, the backer of the downtown ordinances that make it illegal for poor people to sit on the streets and so forth, convened a group of people, the ACLU, opposed the ordinances. And so they've got a few things to say about some anti-homeless ordinances, but the primary anti-homeless ordinance that has occupied my attention and many of us, the sleeping ban, has always been one which Bob Tarrin and Eleanor Eisenberg and, well, heck, all the other great liberal power makers of the ACLU have been unwilling to speak publicly on, much less take any legal position on. So, for example, when the city, under Mayor Rodkin and Scott Kennedy and Cynthia Matthews, got together this vicious injunction, which means that not only will you go to jail if you sleep twice within 48 hours, but if you sleep once at City Hall, you can be punished for up to 6 months in jail, thanks to this new injunction. When that injunction came down on May 30th or so, the ACLU was there, but only to speak about the right to protest. Not, for instance, to speak about the right to sleep for poor people. Can you think that there's not going to be too much protesting if people are going to be arrested for sleeping? But that didn't impact our ACLU. The ACLU has also been unwilling to take any positive, proactive action that, for example, like the Berkeley ACLU has taken to make sure that the anti-homeless Proposition O in Berkeley, which essentially was modeled on our Santa Cruz sit on the sidewalk, go to jail laws, ask for a dime after dark, go to jail laws. Proposition O of Berkeley was fought by the Berkeley ACLU and is being fought and is on hold because of the successful suit which the Berkeley ACLU carried to the federal court. And Claudia Wilkin now has that law on hold. But we haven't heard Eleanor Eisenberg doing anything of the kind down here, or any of her cohorts in the ACLU. I've repeatedly brought the issue to the ACLU and they've repeatedly ignored it, or trashed it, or killed it. Because there's a class issue involved here. Most people, almost everybody in the ACLU doesn't have a homeless situation, doesn't have the problem of sleeping outside, or hasn't made a lifestyle choice where they sleep outside, and these people have just as much right not to be harassed for non-criminal sleeping as does even a person who's desperate who has to sleep outside. I get very tired of pitting one group of homeless people against another. I think that's really vicious. I think that's a kind of a right-wing Republican tactic. The idea that the homeless people should be divided into these little teeny groups, some of whom are worthy, others of whom it's okay to take away their civil rights. No, thank you. In any case, Eisenberg, she had her coming out party, and let me tell you, it was a plush affair at the Loudoun Nelson Center. This was about a week ago. There were hors d'oeuvres aplenty. There were shiny new buttons and slick literature, and there were fancy speakers and scam boosters from way back, and there was Mike Rodkin sitting in the corner. Though, interestingly enough, they didn't mention Mike Rodkin's name, at least the folks who were running the Eleanor Eisenberg thing realized that Mike is not regarded with great love in a number of quarters, not just homeless rights activists, but he's angered unionists who believe that, for example, firemen should have the right to an arbitration process. He's angered different groups, and so he was the one establishment politician there that was not mentioned. Celia Scott was given a round of applause, and Marty Wormhout was given a round of applause, and Fred Keeley, the guy who voted for CAMP, that's the campaign against marijuana production helicopters, he was given a round of applause. And then Eleanor came out and made a little speech about how bad homelessness was and what can we do about it. But when I talked to her and said, Eleanor, what are we going to do about the sleeping ban, she crossed herself and backed off and slid away to the hors d'oeuvre table. Didn't want to say anything about that issue. The only thing she would tell me was, I don't favor ending that law, scrapping that law. I said, well, can we modify it? I said, well, perhaps, but I'm not going to talk about it. people who are listening to this show, any of them who take an interest in these elections, and perhaps we should and perhaps we shouldn't, do talk to her about it. Eleanor Eisenberg is probably a winning candidate because she's got so much money and prestige behind her. There are 4 seats open. Catherine Byers is running for one of them, and frankly, I haven't endorsed Catherine Byers. I call her Birdseed Byers. She's an amiable enough woman, and indeed has called me back quite regularly, as I requested her to do when I had some point of information. But in all her many years in the city council since 1989, where she has sat continuously, she has refused repeatedly to put on the agenda the question of the sleeping ban. And I feel we have to make her do that. We have to make her and Celia put the issue on the agenda before this election, so that a vote comes, and if Mayor Mike wants to say, let's arrest them for sleeping at night, then he's going to have to say so in a public forum and go on record and be counted on that in a vote. And then all the good liberals of Santa Cruz can decide, all the wonderful students of the university can make up their minds, all the pals of the scam machine can come out and figure whether they're going to commit to this particular position. Because that's what he's doing, that's what he's done, and I have no doubt he's going to vote against any modification of the sleeping ban law. But before I jabber on about this, I was talking about courts and a court solution. That was actually supposed to be an intro into this next song, which I find a wonderful song. It's also by Mark Levy. It's also from the album Take Off Your Clothes. I think I'm going to play that song before we go too much further. It's called Chief Justice Rehnquist. And it was written 10 years ago, but I'm afraid it's more meaningful now even than ever before.
Rather than a punk, jury follows test of morality, grins the Honorable Justice. April 14th, 1995, we're in the house of Tom Noddy, with Tom Noddy, Linda LeMaster, both of them old-time activists around issues of rights for poor people, and myself, Robert Norris, also such an activist. And we all know each other from 2 decades ago, or nearly, from struggles around the rights of poor people at Scott's Creek and elsewhere. So I'd like to introduce the panelists. Here's Linda. Hi, Linda.
And what did you mean by elsewhere, Mr. Norris?
Make no comments on that. Say hello to Tom Noddy. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Robert.
So the reason that the purpose of this discussion today was to discuss different perspectives on how to succeed at influencing politicians around the issues of the rights of poor people. And there was, Tom was quite successful in doing this in the early 80s, and to some extent in the late 70s, and we've been having some success in the late 80s and early 90s, and we're looking to the road ahead. And I kind of thought we might do some historical background on beginning with you, Tom, and of course, Linda, you can fill in too, but I guess I will throw in my voice about around issues first of Scott's Creek and then possibly food stamps, the food stamps struggle, any other struggles that come to mind during that period, and then your success, Tom, with the Street Performers Guild in stopping pressure by mall merchants to regulate strong musicians. Take it away, Tom.
Okay, then. So I came into Santa Cruz County in 1977. My band broke down. I was living with a lady and a kid. We'd been political activists in the past, but now we're going off to be hippies. And rather than repeat the experiences that we'd had recently, political activism, which I felt was sort of reaching out, you know, taking on issues that weren't, that hadn't really come to me, you know, not knowing what I was talking about and insisting that people do things my way, which, you know, I saw other people do and objected to. I saw people from non-working class backgrounds.
The issue you were getting into at this time was that of the rights of people to vehicles, not to be harassed by police.
Well, you want to jump forward to that?
Well, I'm trying to get the focus on differences of styles of activism and focuses. And to do that, I want to kind of give a cursory view of what happened in 77 and 78, a very kind of quick overview, so that we can focus on those incidents that you feel are crucial, where your negotiating skills and particular kinds of tactics you used, you feel were successful in getting what you wanted.
Right, so I'm trying to give you a background of what my experience in the movement was prior to that, which I found objectionable. And so when it came up in 77, 78, around people living in vehicles and or huts on the beach, I didn't go at it the same way that I had when I was a student radical, thought I knew
so
better than poor people in town.
And how did you go at it then? What was the difference?
In order to tell you the difference, I have to tell you what I was in the middle of saying, which was the way that people, student activists, as I had seen prior to that, and other activists who purported to be speaking for the poor and really didn't have a sense of what the poor were interested in doing. You know, there are people who stepped forward in front of the ranks of the poor in order to be the vanguard of the movement of the poor. And those people who stood forward didn't share those experiences and didn't really know where that thing was moving, and yet they wanted to lead them in the direction they wanted to go. Anyway, that was my experience prior to, and then...
Did you have any specific experiences prior to that, like protests and welfare hearings, or did you get involved in poor people's struggles in the early 70s anywhere? Any memories of that?
In the late 60s, when I was in college, I helped to form the first peace rally in Memphis, Tennessee, as a member of the Students for a Democratic Society at that campus where we formed a chapter of SDS. I then joined with some of the civil rights workers who were working in Memphis, including the garbage strike, the garbage workers strike that was going on that eventually led Martin Luther King to town where he was assassinated. I worked with the Invaders, a black militant group. Essentially, we were a street gang who became a black militant group in town, as well as eventually when SDS was sort of busting up around God knows what, some people from the United Farm Workers Organizing Committee came into town, and I worked with them on the grape boycott that was happening. We were spectacularly successful. And then I hit the road, and I left me.
Garbage workers, farm workers.
What was all the things you just described led him to this conclusion?
Was this the case in each of those groups? Because the Vanguard were different tactics used in each group?
No, actually, the United Farm Workers was pretty. The couple who came to Memphis were, in fact, farm workers. And had become political activists from their experiences. So that was a good experience, actually. And I'd worked with other people who had direct experience in what they were then doing. I'd had both experiences in the past. Mm-hmm. I thought one of the problems that I was seeing at that time was, that I needed to divide one from the other. I had to see where, I'd read some things that suggested that the work of an organizer was not to declare himself the vanguard and lead those people to where he thinks they ought to be going, which is politicizing the people who are not political enough. But that the job was to see what it was that the people wanted and to see how you could help organize it to go in that direction, and then check with the people again to see if that's what they wanted. And invariably, you couldn't have done exactly what they were up to, and they would have changed anyway, so you had to check again and see if you were still doing what they had in mind, and then you had to readjust, and your job as an organizer in one of those situations was to continually check with what was really wanted.
So then you came to Santa Cruz.
Is this still your view?
Huh?
Is this conclusion still how you feel?
Yeah. Well, my experience in Santa Cruz has confirmed that. So then I came to Santa Cruz, and my van broke down. I was living in my van with Andy and Loff, and we got a ticket for living in our van, and that was apparently illegal. So here was a situation that was straight ahead. It's really what I was doing. I wasn't kidding. I was living in my van.
It was an absolute
illegal
thing.
They came to me and they said, "Here's your issue," the cop said as he handed me a ticket. So Andy and I agreed that this was our issue. And so we went to investigate these tickets and see if this was... what is this? There's a law against living in your vehicle, so all those people in Winnebagoes are illegal, I suppose. They're probably getting tickets like that in this tourist town all the time. Or maybe not. Let's get some data. The assumption among other people who lived in broken down school buses and various things like us was that those others weren't getting the tickets and we were, so we thought maybe we would investigate using that as our theory. We would look at the microfiche and see if that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the county building, we looked through the microfiche, and we were actually able to document that Winnebagoes don't get the tickets. What we were able to see was
an upsurge of tickets.
A tremendous this. I'm searching tickets just for that year, 1977. The law had been in effect, that particular version of the law had been in effect for 4 or 5 years or more. And but almost no tickets had been given for most of those years. I mean, really a single-digit number of tickets for the entire year. The year before, it was, you know, a slight double-digit. And that year, in 77, as of September, when we checked, they'd already given 360-odd tickets.
Wow.
So there was clearly a conscious decision by
this. Was there outrage among the ticketed to organize at that time, other than you and Andy?
Actually, there wasn't. It was outrage, but there wasn't much effort to organize.
So we're isolated from each other at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
But the police helped solve that problem.
That's right. That's right. The cops in town were now driving around town, cruising, you know. Obviously, some policy decision had been made by the police department to enforce this law. And so, lots of people
was
like
it
us.
Prop 13 was before that, right?
That's right, before Prop 13. Had decided to, you know, ticket blitz the town, and the effect was to drive a lot of people like myself out of the city. But rather than just go away, many of us went into the county and gathered, as Linda just suggested, into pockets at the beaches mostly, and a lot of North County. And so suddenly the sheriffs were faced with a situation where they used to have the odd vehicle or two or three at the beaches, and now there were gatherings of vehicles. So the sheriffs had a new problem created by the city police for them to deal with.
So the problem that was created eventually came to a head at Scott's Creek Bluff in 1977 in December. And in another tape, which I have, we have an extensive chronology of that, which I think is very useful and
good.
What happened was, of course, if I may summarize the arrests of how many people in vehicles, more or less?
Well, at the beach, there were 9 vehicles, 11 people arrested.
And this was outside the city, it was done by the sheriffs,